day's ride ahead of them. Aragorn rose early the following morning, his fingers twitched with anticipation at the thought of finally finding the Razak.
"The two of you must be careful," said Saphira. "The Razak could have spies watching for travelers that fit your description."
"We'll do our best to remain inconspicuous," he assured her.
She lowered her head until their eyes met.
"Perhaps, but realize that I won't be able to protect you as I did with the Urghuls. I will be too far away to come to your aid, nor would I survive long in the narrow streets your kind favor. Follow Brom's lead in this hunt. He is sensible."
"I know," he said somberly.
"Will you go with Brom to the Varden? Once the Razak are killed, he will want to take you to them. And since Galbatorix will be enraged by the Razak's death, that may be the safest thing for us to do."
Aragorn rubbed his arms.
"I don't want to fight the Empire all the time like the Varden do. Life is more than constant war. There'll be time to consider it once the Razak are gone."
"Don't be too sure," she warned,
then went to hide herself until night. The road was clogged with farmers taking their goods to market in Drasliona. Brom and Aragorn were forced to slow their horses and wait for wagons that blocked the way. Although they saw smoke in the distance before noon, it was another league before the city was clearly visible. Unlike Tirm, a planned city, Drasliona was a tangled mess that sprawled next to Leona Lake. Ramshackled buildings sat on crooked streets, and the heart of the city was surrounded by a dirty, pale yellow wall of daubed mud. Several miles east, a mountain of bare rock speared the sky with spires and columns, a tenebrous nightmare ship. Near vertical sides rose out of the ground like a jagged piece of the earth's bone. Brom pointed. "That is Hellgrind. It's the reason Drasliona was originally built. People are fascinated by it, even though it's an unhealthy and malevolent thing." He gestured at the buildings inside the city walls. "We should go to the center of the city first." As they crept along the road to Drasliona, Aragorn saw that the highest building within the city was a cathedral that loomed behind the walls. It was strikingly similar to Hellgrind, especially when its arches and flanged spires caught the light. "Who do they worship?" he asked. Brom grimaced in distaste. "Their prayers go to Hellgrind. It's a cruel religion they practice. They drink human blood and make flesh offerings. Their priests often lack body parts because they believe that the more bone and sinew you give up, the less you're attached to the mortal world. They spend much of their time arguing about which of Hellgrind's three peaks is the highest and most important, and whether the fourth and lowest should be included in their worship."
"That's horrible," said Aragorn, shuddering.
"Yes," said Brom grimly. "But don't say that to a believer. You'll quickly lose a hand in penance."
At Drasliona's enormous gates, they led the horses through the crush of people. 10 soldiers were stationed on either side of the gates, casually scanning the crowd. Aragorn and Brom passed into the city without incident. The houses inside the city wall were tall and thin to compensate for the lack of space. Those next to the wall were braced against it. Most of the houses hung over the narrow, winding streets, covering the sky so that it was hard to tell if it was night or day. Nearly all the buildings were constructed of the same rough brown wood, which darkened the city even more. The air reeked like a sewer. The streets were filthy. A group of ragged children ran between the houses, fighting over scraps of bread. Deformed beggars crouched next to the entrance gates, pleading for money. Their cries for help were like a chorus of the damned.
"We don't even treat animals like this," thought Aragorn, eyes wide with anger.
"I won't stay here," he said, rebelling against the sight. "It gets better farther in," said Brom. "Right now we need to find an inn and form a strategy. Drasliona can be a dangerous place to even the most cautious. I don't want to remain on the streets any longer than necessary."
They forged deeper into Drasliona, leaving the squalid entrance behind. As they entered wealthier parts of the city, Aragorn wondered,
"How can these people live in ease when the suffering around them is so obvious?"
They found lodging at the Golden Globe, which was cheap but not decrepit.
A narrow bed was crammed against one wall of the room with a rickety table and a basin alongside it. Aragorn took one look at the mattress and said, "I'm sleeping on the floor. There are probably enough bugs in that thing to eat me alive."
"Well, I wouldn't want to deprive them of a meal," said Brom, dropping his bags on the mattress.
Aragorn set his own on the floor and pulled off his bow. "What now?" he asked.
"We find food and beer. After that, sleep. Tomorrow we can start looking for the Razak."
Before they left the room, Brom warned, "No matter what happens, make sure that your tongue doesn't loosen. We'll have to leave immediately if we're given away." The inn's food was barely adequate, but its beer was excellent. By the time they stumbled back to the room, Aragorn's head was buzzing pleasantly. He unrolled his blankets on the floor and slid under them as Brom tumbled onto the bed. Just before Aragorn fell asleep, he contacted Saphira.
"We're going to be here for a few days, but this shouldn't take as long as it did at Tirm. When we discover where the Razak are, you might be able to help us get them. I'll talk to you in the morning. Right now, I'm not thinking too clearly."
"You've been drinking,"
came the accusing thought. Aragorn considered it for a moment and had to agree that she was absolutely right. Her disapproval was clear, but all she said was,
"I won't envy you in the morning."
"No," groaned Aragorn, "but Brom will. He drank twice as much as I did."
Trail of Oil.
"What was I thinking?"
wondered Aragorn in the morning. His head was pounding and his tongue felt thick and fuzzy. As a rat skittered under the floor, Aragorn winced at the noise.
"How are we feeling?"
asked Saphira smugly. Aragorn ignored her. A moment later, Brom rolled out of bed with a grumble. He doused his head in cold water from the basin, then left the room. Aragorn followed him into the hallway. "Where are you going?" he asked.
"To recover."
"I'll come."
At the bar, Aragorn discovered that Brom's method of recovery involved imbibing copious amounts of hot tea and ice water, and washing it all down with brandy. When they returned to the room, Aragorn was able to function somewhat better. Brom belted on his sword and smoothed the wrinkles out of his robe.
"The first thing we need to do is ask some discreet questions. I want to find out where the Seether Oil was delivered in Drasleona, and where it was taken from there. Most likely soldiers or workmen were involved in transporting it. We have to find those men and get one to talk."
They left the Golden Globe and searched for warehouses where the Seether Oil might have been delivered. Near the center of Drasleona, the streets began to slant upward toward a palace of polished granite. It was built on a rise, so that it towered above every building except the cathedral. The courtyard was a mosaic of mother-of-pearl, and parts of the walls were inlaid with gold. Black statues stood in alcoves, with sticks of incense smoking in their cold hands. Soldiers stationed every 4 yards watched passers-by keenly.
"Who lives there?" asked Aragorn in awe.
"Marcus Tabor, ruler of this city. He answers only to the king and his own conscience, which hasn't been very active recently," said Brom.
They walked around the palace, looking at the gated, ornate houses that surrounded it. By midday they had learned nothing useful, so they stopped for lunch.
"This city's too vast for us to comb it together," said Brom. "Search on your own. Meet me at the Golden Globe by dusk."
He glowered at Aragorn from under his bushy eyebrows.
"I'm trusting you not to do anything stupid."
"I won't," promised Aragorn. Brom handed him some coins and strode away in the opposite direction. Throughout the rest of the day, Aragorn talked with shopkeepers and workers, trying to be as pleasant and charming as he could. His questions led him from one end of the city to the other and back again. No one seemed to know about the oil. Wherever he went, the cathedral stared down at him. It was impossible to escape its tall spires. At last, he found a man who had helped ship the Seether Oil and remembered to which warehouse it had been taken. Aragorn excitedly went to look at the building, then returned to the Golden Globe. It was over an hour before Brom came back, slumped with fatigue.
"Did you find anything?" asked Aragorn.
Brom brushed back his white hair.
"I heard a great deal of interesting things today, not the least of which is that Galbatorix will visit Drasleona within the week."
"What?" exclaimed Aragorn.
Brom slouched against the wall, the lines on his forehead deepening. It seems that Tabor has taken a few too many liberties with his power, so Galbatorix has decided to come teach him a lesson in humility. It's the first time the king has left Urubane in over 10 years. Do you think he knows of us? Asked Aragorn. Of course he knows of us, but I'm sure he hasn't been told our location. If he had, we would already be in the Razak's grasp. However, this means that whatever we're going to do about the Razak must be accomplished before Galbatorix arrives. We don't want to be anywhere within 20 leagues of him. The one thing in our favor is that the Razak are sure to be here, preparing for his visit. I want to get the Razak, said Aragorn, his fists tightening, but not if it means fighting the king. He could probably tear me to pieces. That seemed to amuse Brom. Very good. Caution. And you're right. You wouldn't stand a chance against Galbatorix. Now tell me what you learned today. It might confirm what I heard. Aragorn shrugged. It was mostly drivel. But I did talk with a man who knew where the oil was taken. It's just an old warehouse. Other than that, I didn't discover anything useful. My day was a little more fruitful than yours. I heard the same thing you did, so I went to the warehouse and talked with the workers. It didn't take much cajoling before they revealed that the cases of Seether oil are always sent from the warehouse to the palace. And that's when you came back here, finished Aragorn. No, it's not. Don't interrupt. After that, I went to the palace and got myself invited into the servants' quarters as a bard. For several hours I wandered about, amusing the maids and others with songs and poems, and asking questions all the while. Brom slowly filled his pipe with tobacco. It's really amazing all the things servants find out. Did you know that one of the earls has 3 mistresses, and they all live in the same wing of the palace? He lit the pipe. Aside from the tidbits, I was told, quite by accident, where the oil is taken from the palace. And that is? Asked Aragorn impatiently. Brom puffed on his pipe and blew a smoke ring. Out of the city, of course. Every full moon, 2 slaves are sent to the base of Helgrind with a month's worth of provisions. Whenever the Seether oil arrives in Dras Leona, they send it along with the provisions. The slaves are never seen again. And the one time someone followed them, he disappeared too. I thought the riders demolished the slave trade, said Aragorn. Unfortunately, it has flourished under the king's reign. So the Razak are in Helgrind, said Aragorn, thinking of the Rock Mountain. There or somewhere nearby. If they are in Helgrind, they'll either be at the bottom, and protected by a thick stone door, or higher up, where only their flying mounts or Saphira can reach. Top or bottom, their shelter will no doubt be disguised. He thought for a moment. If Saphira and I go flying around Helgrind, the Razak are sure to see us, not to mention all of Dras Leona. It is a problem, agreed Brom. Aragorn frowned. What if we took the place of the 2 slaves? The full moon isn't far off. It would give us a perfect opportunity to get close to the Razak. Brom tugged his beard thoughtfully. That's chancy at best. If the slaves are killed from a distance, we'll be in trouble. We can't harm the Razak if they aren't in sight. We don't know if the slaves are killed at all, Aragorn pointed out. I'm sure they are, said Brom, his face grave. Then his eyes sparkled, and he blew another smoke ring. Still, it's an intriguing idea. If it were done with Saphira hidden nearby and a... His voice trailed off. It might work, but we'll have to move quickly. With the king coming, there isn't much time. Should we go to Helgrind and look around? It would be good to see the land in daylight, so we won't be surprised by any ambushes, said Aragorn. Brom fingered his staff. That can be done later. Tomorrow I'll return to the palace and figure out how we can replace the slaves. I have to be careful not to arouse suspicion, though. I could easily be revealed by spies and courtiers who know about the Razak. I can't believe it. We actually found them, said Aragorn quietly. An image of his dead uncle and burned farm flashed through his mind. His jaw tightened. The toughest part is yet to come. But yes, we've done well, said Brom. If fortune smiles on us, you may soon have your revenge, and the Varden will be rid of a dangerous enemy. What comes after that will be up to you. Aragorn opened his mind and jubilantly told Saphira,
We found the Ra'zac's lair!
Where?
He quickly explained what they had discovered.
Hellgrind, she mused. A fitting place for them.
Aragorn agreed.
When we're done here, maybe we could visit Carverhall.
What is it you want?
She asked, suddenly sour.
To go back to your previous life. You know that won't happen, so stop mooning after it. At a certain point, you have to decide what to commit to. Will you hide for the rest of your life, or will you help the Varden? Those are the only options left to you, unless you join forces with Galbatorix, which I do not and never will accept.
Softly, he said, If I must choose, I cast my fate with the Varden, as you well know.
Yes, but sometimes you have to hear yourself say it.
She left him to ponder her words. Worshippers of Hellgrind. Aragorn was alone in the room when he awoke. Scrawled onto the wall with a charcoal stick was a note that read, Aragorn, I will be gone until late tonight. Coins for food are under the mattress. Explore the city, enjoy yourself, but stay unnoticed. Brom. P.S. Avoid the palace. Don't go anywhere without your bow. Keep it strung. Aragorn wiped the wall clean, then retrieved the money from under the bed. He slipped the bow across his back, thinking, I wish I didn't have to go armed all the time. He left the Golden Globe and ambled through the streets, stopping to observe whatever interested him. There were many intriguing stores, but none quite as exciting as Angela's herb shop in Tirm. At times he glared at the dark, claustrophobic houses and wished that he were free of the city. When he grew hungry, he bought a wedge of cheese and a loaf of bread and ate them, sitting on a curb. Later, in a far corner of Dras Leona, he heard an auctioneer rattling off a list of prices. Curious, he headed toward the voice and arrived at a wide opening between two buildings. 10 men stood on a waist-high platform. Arrayed before them was a richly dressed crowd that was both colourful and boisterous. Where are the goods for sale? Wondered Aragorn. The auctioneer finished his list and motioned for a young man behind the platform to join him. The man awkwardly climbed up, chains dragging at his hands and feet.
And here we have our first item, proclaimed the auctioneer. A healthy male from the Hadarach Desert, captured just last month, and in excellent condition. Look at those arms and legs, he's strong as a bull. He'd be perfect as a shield-bearer, or if you don't trust him for that, hard labour. But let me tell you, lords and ladies, that would be a waste. He's bright as a nail, if you can get him to talk a civilised tongue.
The crowd laughed, and Aragorn ground his teeth with fury. His lips started to form a word that would free the slave, and his arm, newly liberated from the splint, rose. The mark on his palm shimmered. He was about to release the magic when it struck him.
He'd never get away.
The slave would be caught before he reached the city walls. Aragorn would only make the situation worse if he tried to help. He lowered his arm and quietly cursed.
Think, this is how you got into trouble with the Urgals.
He watched helplessly as the slave was sold to a tall, hawk-nosed man. The next slave was a tiny girl, no more than 6 years old, wrenched from the arms of her crying mother. As the auctioneer started the bidding, Aragorn forced himself to walk away, rigid with fury and outrage. It was several blocks before the weeping was inaudible.
I'd like to see a thief try to cut my purse right now, he thought grimly,
almost wishing it would happen. Frustrated, he punched a nearby wall, bruising his knuckles.
That's the sort of thing I could stop by fighting the Empire, he realized. With Saphira by my side, I could free those slaves. I've been graced with special powers. It would be selfish of me not to use them for the benefit of others. If I don't, I might as well not be a rider at all.
It was a while before he took stock of his bearings and was surprised to find himself before the cathedral. Its twisted spires were covered with statues and scrollwork. Snarling gargoyles crouched along the eaves. Fantastic beasts writhed on the walls, and heroes and kings marched along their bottom edges, frozen in cold marble. Ribbed arches and tall, stained-glass windows lined the cathedral's sides, along with columns of differing sizes. A lonely turret helmed the building like a mast. Recessed in shadow at the cathedral's front was an iron-bound door inlaid with a row of silver script that Aragorn recognized as the ancient language. As best he could tell, it read, "May thee who enter here understand thine impermanence and forget thine attachments to that which is beloved." The entire building sent a shiver down Aragorn's spine. There was something menacing about it, as if it were a predator crouched in the city, waiting for its next victim. A broad row of steps led to the cathedral's entrance. Aragorn solemnly ascended them and stopped before the door. "I wonder if I can go in." Almost guiltily, he pushed on the door. It swung open smoothly, gliding on oiled hinges. He stepped inside. The silence of a forgotten tomb filled the empty cathedral. The air was dry and chill. Bare walls extended to a vaulted ceiling that was so high Aragorn felt no taller than an ant. Stained-glass windows depicting scenes of anger, hate, and remorse pierced the walls, while spectral beams of light washed sections of the granite pews with transparent hues, leaving the rest in shadow. His hands were shaded a deep blue. Between the windows stood statues with rigid, pale eyes. He returned their stern gazes, then slowly trod up the center row, afraid to break the quiet. His leather boots padded noiselessly on the polished stone floor. The altar was a great slab of stone devoid of adornment. A solitary finger of light fell upon it, illuminating motes of golden dust floating in the air. Behind the altar, the pipes of a wind organ pierced the ceiling and opened themselves to the elements. The instrument would play its music only when a gale rocked Tras Leona. Out of respect, Aragorn knelt before the altar and bowed his head. He did not pray, but paid homage to the cathedral itself. The sorrows of the lives it had witnessed, as well as the unpleasantness of the elaborate pageantry that played out between its walls, emanated from the stones. It was a forbidding place, bare and cold. In that chilling touch, though, came a glimpse of eternity, and perhaps the powers that lay there. Finally, Aragorn inclined his head and rose. Calm and grave, he whispered words to himself in the ancient language, then turned to leave. He froze. His heart jumped, hammering like a drum. The Ra'zac stood at the cathedral's entrance, watching him. Their swords were drawn, keen edges bloody in a crimson light. A sibilant hiss came from the smaller Ra'zac. Neither of them moved. Rage welled up in Aragorn. He had chased the Ra'zac for so many weeks that the pain of their murderous deed had dulled within him. But his vengeance was at hand. His wrath exploded like a volcano, fueled even more by his pent-up fury at the slave's plight. A roar broke from his lips, echoing like a thunderstorm as he snatched his bow from his back. Deftly, he fit an arrow to the string and loosed it. Two more followed an instant later. The Ra'zac leapt away from the arrows with inhuman swiftness. They hissed as they ran up the aisle between the pews, cloaks flapping like raven wings. Aragorn reached for another arrow, but caution stayed his hand. "If they knew where to find me, Brom is in danger as well. I must warn him." Then, to Aragorn's horror, a line of soldiers filed into the cathedral, and he glimpsed a field of uniforms jostling outside the doorway. Aragorn gazed hungrily at the charging Ra'zac, then swept around, searching for means of escape. A vestibule to the left of the altar caught his attention. He bounded through the archway and dashed down a corridor that led to a priory with a belfry. The patter of the Ra'zac's feet behind him made him quicken his pace until the hall abruptly ended with a closed door. He pounded against it, trying to break it open, but the wood was too strong. The Ra'zac were nearly upon him. Frantic, he sucked in his breath and barked, "Jirda!" With a flash, the door splintered into pieces and fell to the floor. Aragorn jumped into the small room and continued running. He sped through several chambers, startling a group of priests. Shouts and curses followed him. The priory bell tolled an alarm. Aragorn dodged through a kitchen, past a pair of monks, then slipped through a side door. He skidded to a stop in a garden surrounded by a high brick wall devoid of handholds. There were no other exits. Aragorn turned to leave, but there was a low hiss as the Ra'zac shouldered aside the door. Desperate, he rushed at the wall, arms pumping. Magic could not help him here. If he used it to break through the wall, he would be too tired to run. He jumped. Even with his arms outstretched, only his fingertips cleared the edge of the wall. The rest of his body smashed against the bricks, driving out his breath. Aragorn gasped and hung there, struggling not to fall. The Ra'zac prowled into the garden, swinging their heads from side to side, like wolfhounds sniffing for prey. Aragorn sensed their approach and heaved with his arms. His shoulders shrieked with pain as he scrambled onto the wall and dropped to the other side. He stumbled, then regained his balance and darted down an alley just as the Ra'zac leapt over the wall. Galvanized, Aragorn put on another burst of speed. He ran for over a mile before he had to stop and catch his breath. Unsure if he had lost the Ra'zac, he found a crowded marketplace and dived under a parked wagon.
How did they find me? He wondered, panting. They shouldn't have known where I was, unless something happened to Brom.
He reached out with his mind to Sephira and said,
The Ra'zac found me. We're all in danger. Check if Brom's all right. If he is, warn him, and have him meet me at the inn. And be ready to fly here as fast as you can. We may need your help to escape.
She was silent, then said curtly,
He'll meet you at the inn. Don't stop moving. You're in great danger.
Don't I know it, muttered Aragorn as he rolled out from under the wagon.
He hurried back to the Golden Globe, quickly packed their belongings, saddled the horses, then led them to the street. Brom soon arrived, staff in hand, scowling dangerously. He swung onto Snowfire and asked,
What happened?
I was in the cathedral when the Ra'zac just appeared behind me, said Aragorn, climbing onto Cadoc. I ran back as fast as possible, but they could be here at any second. Sephira will join us once we're out of Dras Leona.
We have to get outside the city walls before they close the gates if they haven't already, said Brom. If they're shut, it'll be nigh impossible for us to leave. Whatever you do, don't get separated from me.
Aragorn stiffened as ranks of soldiers marched down one end of the street. Brom cursed, lashed Snowfire with his reins and galloped away. Aragorn bent low over Cadoc and followed. They nearly crashed several times during the wild, hazardous ride, plunging through masses of people that clogged the streets as they neared the city wall. When the gates finally came into view, Aragorn pulled on Cadoc's reins with dismay. The gates were already half closed, and a double line of pikemen blocked their way.
"They'll cut us to pieces!" he exclaimed.
"We have to try and make it," said Brom, his voice hard. "I'll deal with the men, but you have to keep the gates open for us."
Aragorn nodded, gritted his teeth, and urged Cadoc on. They ploughed toward the line of unwavering soldiers, who lowered their pikes toward the horses' chests and braced the weapons against the ground. Though the horses snorted with fear, Aragorn and Brom held them in place. Aragorn heard the soldiers shout, but kept his attention on the gates inching shut. As they neared the sharp pikes, Brom raised his hand and spoke. The words struck with precision. The soldiers fell to each side as if their legs had been cut out from under them. The gap between the gates shrank by the second. Hoping that the effort would not prove too much for him, Aragorn drew on his power and shouted,
"Du grind, Huldr!"
A deep, grating sound emanated from the gates as they trembled, then ground to a stop. The crowd and guards fell silent, staring with amazement. With a clatter of the horses' hooves, Brom and Aragorn shot out from behind Dras Leona's wall. The instant they were free, Aragorn released the gates. They shuddered, then boomed shut. He swayed with the expected fatigue, but managed to keep riding. Brom watched him with concern. Their flight continued through the outskirts of Dras Leona as alarm trumpets sounded on the city wall. Sephira was waiting for them by the edge of the city, hidden behind some trees. Her eyes burned, her tail whipped back and forth.
"Go ride her," said Brom, "and this time stay in the air, no matter what happens to me. I'll head south. Fly nearby. I don't care if Sephira's seen."
Aragorn quickly mounted Sephira. As the ground dwindled away beneath him, he watched Brom gallop along the road.
"Are you all right?"
asked Sephira.
"Yes," said Aragorn, "but only because we were very lucky."
A puff of smoke blew from her nostrils.
"All the time we've spent searching for the Ra'zac was useless."
"I know," he said, letting his head sag against her scales. "If the Ra'zac had been the only enemies back there, I would have stayed and fought. But with all the soldiers on their side, it was hardly a fair match."
"You understand that there will be talk of us now. This was hardly an unobtrusive escape. Evading the Empire will be harder than ever."
There was an edge to her voice that he was unaccustomed to.
"I know."
They flew low and fast over the road. Leona Lake receded behind them. The land became dry and rocky and filled with tough, sharp bushes and tall cactuses. Clouds darkened the sky. Lightning flashed in the distance. As the wind began to howl, Saphira glided steeply down to Brom. He stopped the horses and asked,
"What's wrong?"
"The wind's too strong."
"It's not that bad," objected Brom.
"It is up there," said Aragorn, pointing at the sky.
Brom swore and handed him Cadoc's reins. They trotted away with Saphira following on foot, though on the ground she had difficulty keeping up with the horses. The gale grew stronger, flinging dirt through the air and twisting like a dervish. They wrapped scarves around their heads to protect their eyes. Brom's robe flapped in the wind while his beard whipped about as if it had a life of its own. Though it would make them miserable, Aragorn hoped it would rain so their tracks would be obliterated. Soon darkness forced them to stop. With only the stars to guide them, they left the road and made camp behind two boulders. It was too dangerous to light a fire, so they ate cold food while Saphira sheltered them from the wind. After the sparse dinner, Aragorn asked bluntly, "How did they find us?" Brom started to light his pipe, but thought better of it and put it away.
"One of the palace servants warned me there were spies among them. Somehow word of me and my questions must have reached Tabor, and through him the Razak."
"We can't go back to Drasleona, can we?" asked Aragorn.
Brom shook his head.
"Not for a few years."
Aragorn held his head between his hands.
"Then should we draw the Razak out? If we let Saphira be seen, they'll come running to wherever she is."
"And when they do, there will be 50 soldiers with them," said Brom. "At any rate, this isn't the time to discuss it. Right now we have to concentrate on staying alive. Tonight will be the most dangerous because the Razak will be hunting us in the dark when they are strongest. We'll have to trade watches until morning."
"Right," said Aragorn, standing. He hesitated and squinted. His eyes had caught a flicker of movement, a small patch of color that stood out from the surrounding nightscape. He stepped toward the edge of their camp, trying to see it better.
"What is it?" asked Brom as he unrolled his blankets.
Aragorn stared into the darkness, then turned back. "I don't know. I thought I saw something. It must have been a bird."
Pain erupted in the back of his head, and Saphira roared. Then Aragorn toppled to the ground, unconscious.
The Razak's Revenge. A dull throbbing roused Aragorn. Every time blood pulsed through his head, it brought a fresh wave of pain. He cracked his eyes open and winced. Tears rushed to his eyes as he looked directly into a bright lantern. He blinked and looked away. When he tried to sit up, he realized that his hands were tied behind his back. He turned lethargically and saw Brom's arms. Aragorn was relieved to see that they were bound together. Why was that? He struggled to figure it out until the thought suddenly came to him. They wouldn't tie up a dead man. But then who were they? He swiveled his head further, then stopped as a pair of black boots entered his vision. Aragorn looked up, right into the cowled face of a Razak. Fear jolted through him. He reached for the magic and started to voice a word that would kill the Razak, but then halted, puzzled. He could not remember the word. Frustrated, he tried again, only to feel it slip out of his grasp. Above him, the Razak laughed chillingly.
"The drug is working, yes. I think you will not be bothering us again."
There was a rattle off to the left, and Aragorn was appalled to see the second Razak fit a muzzle over Saphira's head. Her wings were pinioned to her sides by black chains. There were shackles on her legs. Aragorn tried to contact her, but felt nothing.
"She was most cooperative once we threatened to kill you," hissed the Razak.
Squatting by the lantern, he rummaged through Aragorn's bags, examining and discarding various items until he removed Zarok.
"What a pretty thing for one so insignificant. Maybe I will keep it."
He leaned closer and sneered.
"Or maybe if you behave, our master will let you polish it."
His moist breath smelled like raw meat. Then he turned the sword over in his hands and screeched as he saw the symbol on the scabbard. His companion rushed over. They stood over the sword, hissing and clicking. At last, they faced Aragorn.
"You will serve our master very well, yes."
Aragorn forced his thick tongue to form words.
"If I do, I will kill you."
They chuckled coldly.
"Oh no, we are too valuable. But you are disposable."
A deep snarl came from Sephira. Smoke roiled from her nostrils. The Ra'zac did not seem to care. Their attention was diverted when Brom groaned and rolled onto his side. One of the Ra'zac grabbed his shirt and thrust him effortlessly into the air.
"It's wearing off. Give him more. Let's just kill him," said the shorter Ra'zac. "He has caused us much grief."
The taller one ran his finger down his sword.
"A good plan. But remember, the king's instructions were to keep them alive. We can say he was killed when we captured them." "And what of this one?"
the Ra'zac asked, pointing his sword at Aragorn.
"If he talks..."
His companion laughed and drew a wicked dagger.
"He would not dare."
There was a long silence, then...
"Agreed."
They dragged Brom to the center of the camp and shoved him to his knees. Brom sagged to one side. Aragorn watched with growing fear.
"I have to get free."
He wrenched at the ropes, but they were too strong to break.
"None of that now,"
said the tall Ra'zac, poking him with a sword. He nosed the air and sniffed. Something seemed to trouble him. The other Ra'zac growled, yanked Brom's head back and swept the dagger towards his exposed throat. At that very moment a low buzz sounded, followed by the Razak's howl. An arrow protruded from his shoulder. The Ra'zac nearest Aragorn dropped to the ground, barely avoiding a second arrow. He scuttled to his wounded companion and they glared into the darkness, hissing angrily. They made no move to stop Brom as he blearily staggered upright.
"Get down!" cried Aragorn.
Brom wavered, then tottered toward Aragorn. As more arrows hissed into the camp from the unseen attackers, the Ra'zac rolled behind some boulders. There was a lull, then arrows came from the opposite direction. Caught by surprise, the Ra'zac reacted slowly. Their cloaks were pierced in several places, and a shattered arrow buried itself in one's arm. With a wild cry, the smaller Ra'zac fled toward the road, kicking Aragorn viciously in the side as he passed. His companion hesitated, then grabbed the dagger from the ground and raced after him. As he left the camp, he hurled the knife at Aragorn. A strange light suddenly burned in Brom's eyes. He threw himself in front of Aragorn, his mouth open in a soundless snarl. The dagger struck him with a soft thump, and he landed heavily on his shoulder. His head lolled limply.
"No!"
screamed Aragorn, though he was doubled over in pain. He heard footsteps. Then his eyes closed, and he knew no more. Murtagh. For a long while, Aragorn was aware only of the burning in his side. Each breath was painful. It felt as though he had been the one stabbed, not Brom. His sense of time was skewed. It was hard to tell if weeks had gone by, or only a few minutes. When consciousness finally came to him, he opened his eyes and peered curiously at a campfire several feet away. His hands were still tied together, but the drug must have worn off because he could think clearly again.
"Sephira, are you injured?"
"No, but you and Brom are."
She was crouched over Aragorn, wings spread protectively on either side.
"Sephira, you didn't make that fire, did you? And you couldn't have gotten out of those chains by yourself."
"No."
"I didn't think so."
Aragorn struggled to his knees and saw a young man sitting on the far side of the fire. The stranger, dressed in battered clothes, exuded a calm, assured air. In his hands was a bow, at his side a long hand-and-a-half sword. A white horn bound with silver fittings lay in his lap, and the hilt of a dagger protruded from his boot. His serious face and fierce eyes were framed by locks of brown hair. He appeared to be a few years older than Aragorn, and perhaps an inch or so taller. Behind him, a grey warhorse was picketed. The stranger watched Saphira warily. "Who are you?" asked Aragorn, taking a shallow breath. The man's hands tightened on his bow. "Murtagh." His voice was low and controlled, but curiously emotional. Aragorn pulled his hands underneath his legs so they were in front of him. He clenched his teeth as his side flared with pain.
"Why did you help us?"
"You aren't the only enemies that Azak have. I was tracking them."
"You know who they are?"
"Yes." Aragorn concentrated on the ropes that bound his wrists and reached for the magic. He hesitated, aware of Murtagh's eyes on him, then decided it didn't matter.
"Geirda,"
he grunted. The ropes snapped off his wrists. He rubbed his hands to get the blood flowing. Murtagh sucked in his breath. Aragorn braced himself and tried to stand, but his ribs seared with agony. He fell back, gasping between clenched teeth. Murtagh tried to come to his aid, but Saphira stopped him with a growl.
"I would have helped you earlier, but your dragon wouldn't let me near you."
"Her name's Saphira," said Aragorn tightly. "Now let him by. I can't do this alone. Besides, he saved our lives."
Saphira growled again, but folded her wings and backed away. Murtagh eyed her flatly as he stepped forward. He grasped Aragorn's arm, gently pulling him to his feet. Aragorn yelped and would have fallen without support. They went to the fire, where Brom lay on his back.
"How is he?"
asked Aragorn.
"Bad," said Murtagh, lowering him to the ground. "The knife went right between his ribs. You can look at him in a minute, but first we'd better see how much damage the Razak did to you."
He helped Aragorn remove his shirt, then whistled,
"Ouch." "Ouch,"
agreed Aragorn weakly. A blotchy bruise extended down his left side. The red, swollen skin was broken in several places. Murtagh put a hand on the bruise and pressed lightly. Aragorn yelled, and Saphira growled a warning. Murtagh glanced at Saphira as he grabbed a blanket.
"I think you have some broken ribs. It's hard to tell. At least two, maybe more. You're lucky you're not coughing up blood."
He tore the blanket into strips and bound Aragorn's chest. Aragorn slipped the shirt back on.
"Yes, I'm lucky."
He took a shallow breath, sidled over to Brom and saw that Murtagh had cut open the side of his robe to bandage the wound. With trembling fingers, he undid the bandage.
"I wouldn't do that," warned Murtagh. "He'll bleed to death without it."
Aragorn ignored him and pulled the cloth away from Brom's side. The wound was short and thin, belying its depth. Blood streamed out of it. As he had learned when Garrow was injured, a wound inflicted by the Razak was slow to heal. He peeled off his gloves while furiously searching his mind for the healing words Brom had taught him.
"Help me, Saphira," he implored. "I am too weak to do this alone."
Saphira crouched next to him, fixing her eyes on Brom.
"I am here, Aragorn."
As her mind joined his, new strength infused his body. Aragorn drew upon their combined power and focused it on the words. His hand trembled as he held it over the wound.
"Waysa heal," he said.
His palm glowed and Brom's skin flowed together as if it had never been broken. Murtagh watched the entire process. It was over quickly. As the light vanished, Aragorn sat feeling sick.
"We've never done that before," he said.
Saphira nodded.
"Together we can cast spells that are beyond either of us."
Murtagh examined Brom's side and asked,
"Is he completely healed?"
"I can only mend what is on the surface. I don't know enough to fix whatever's damaged inside. It's up to him now. I've done all I can."
Aragorn closed his eyes for a moment, utterly weary.
My head seems to be floating in clouds."
"You probably need to eat," said Murtagh. "I'll make soup."
While Murtagh fixed the meal, Aragorn wondered who this stranger was. His sword and bow were of the finest make, as was his horn. Either he was a thief or accustomed to money, and lots of it.
Why was he hunting the Razek? What have they done to make him an enemy? I wonder if he works for the Varden.
Murtagh handed him a bowl of broth. Aragorn spooned it down and asked,
How long has it been since the Razak fled?
A few hours.
We have to go before they return with reinforcements.
You might be able to travel, said Murtagh, then gestured at Brom. But he can't. You don't get up and ride away after being stabbed between the ribs.
If we make a litter, can you carry Brom with your claws like you did with Garrow?
Aragorn asked Saphira.
Yes, but landing will be awkward.
As long as it can be done.
Aragorn said to Murtagh, Saphira can carry him, but we need a litter. Can you make one?
I don't have the strength.
Wait here. Murtagh left the camp, sword drawn. Aragorn hobbled to his bags and picked up his bow from where it had been thrown by the Razak. He strung it, found his quiver, then retrieved Zarok, which lay hidden in shadow. Last, he got a blanket for the litter. Murtagh returned with two saplings. He laid them parallel on the ground, then lashed the blanket between the poles. After he carefully tied Brom to the makeshift litter, Saphira grasped the saplings and laboriously took flight.
I never thought I would see a sight like that, Murtagh said, an odd note in his voice.
As Saphira disappeared into the dark sky, Aragorn limped to Cadoc and hoisted himself painfully into the saddle.
Thanks for helping us. You should leave now. Ride as far from us as you can. You'll be in danger if the Empire finds you with us. We can't protect you, and I wouldn't see harm come to you on our account.
A pretty speech, said Murtagh, grinding out the fire. But where will you go? Is there a place nearby that you can rest in safety?
No, admitted Aragorn.
Murtagh's eyes glinted as he fingered the hilt of his sword. In that case, I think I'll accompany you until you're out of danger. I've no better place to be. Besides, if I stay with you, I might get another shot at the Razak sooner than if I were on my own. Interesting things are bound to happen around a rider. Aragorn wavered, unsure if he should accept help from a complete stranger. Yet he was unpleasantly aware that he was too weak to force the issue either way.
If Murtagh proves untrustworthy, Saphira can always chase him away.
Join us if you wish, he shrugged. Murtagh nodded and mounted his grey warhorse. Aragorn grabbed Snowfire's reins and rode away from the camp into the wilderness. An oxbow moon provided one light, but he knew that it would only make it easier for the Razak to track them. Though Aragorn wanted to question Murtagh further, he kept silent, conserving his energy for riding. Near dawn, Saphira said,
I must stop. My wings are tired, and Brom needs attention. I discovered a good place to stay about 2 miles ahead of where you are.
They found her sitting at the base of a broad sandstone formation that curved out of the ground like a great hill. Its sides were pocked with caves of varying sizes. Similar domes were scattered across the land. Saphira looked pleased with herself.
I found a cave that can't be seen from the ground. It's large enough for all of us, including the horses. Follow me.
She turned and climbed up the sandstone, her sharp claws digging into the rock. The horses had difficulty as their shod hooves could not grip the sandstone. Aragorn and Murtagh had to pull and shove the animals for almost an hour before they managed to reach the cave. The cavern was a good 100 feet long and more than 20 feet wide, yet it had a small opening that would protect them from bad weather and prying eyes. Darkness swallowed the far end, clinging to the walls like mats of soft black wool.
Impressive, said Murtagh. I'll gather wood for a fire.
Aragorn hurried to Brom. Saphira had set him on a small rock ledge at the rear of the cave. Aragorn clasped Brom's limp hand and anxiously watched his craggy face. After a few minutes he sighed and went to the fire Murtagh had built. They ate quietly, then tried to give Brom water, but the old man would not drink. Stymied, they spread out their bedrolls and slept. Legacy of a Rider.
Wake up, Aragorn!
He stirred and groaned.
I need your help. Something is wrong.
Aragorn tried to ignore the voice and return to sleep.
Arise!
Go away, he grumbled.
Aragorn!
A bellow rang in the cave. He bolted upright, fumbling for his bow. Sephira was crouched over Brom, who had rolled off the ledge and was thrashing on the cave floor. His face was contorted in a grimace. His fists were clenched. Aragorn rushed over, fearing the worst. "Help me hold him down! He's going to hurt himself!" he cried to Murtagh, clasping Brom's arms. His side burned sharply as the old man spasmed. Together they restrained Brom until his convulsions ceased. Then they carefully returned him to the ledge. Aragorn touched Brom's forehead. The skin was so hot that the heat could be felt an inch away. "Get me water and a cloth," he said worriedly. Murtagh brought them, and Aragorn gently bathed Brom's face, trying to cool him down. With the cave quiet again, he noticed the sun shining outside.
"How long did we sleep?" he asked Sephira.
"A good while. I'd been watching Brom for most of that time. He was fine until a minute ago when he started thrashing. I woke you once he fell to the floor."
He stretched, wincing as his ribs twinged painfully. A hand suddenly gripped his shoulder. Brom's eyes snapped open and fixed a glassy stare on Aragorn.
"You," he gasped, "bring me the wineskin."
"Brom?" exclaimed Aragorn, pleased to hear him talk. "You shouldn't drink wine, it'll only make you worse."
"Bring it, boy, just bring it," sighed Brom.
His hand slipped off Aragorn's shoulder. "I'll be right back, hold on." Aragorn dashed to the saddlebags and rummaged through them frantically. "I can't find it," he cried, looking around desperately.
"Here, take mine," said Murtagh, holding out a leather skin.
Aragorn grabbed it and returned to Brom. "I have the wine," he said, kneeling. Murtagh retreated to the cave's mouth so they could have privacy. Brom's next words were faint and indistinct.
"Good."
He moved his arm weakly.
"Now, wash my right hand with it."
"What?"
Aragorn started to ask. "No questions. I haven't time."
Mystified, Aragorn unstoppered the wineskin and poured the liquid onto Brom's palm. He rubbed it into the old man's skin, spreading it around the fingers and over the back of the hand.
"More," croaked Brom.
Aragorn splashed wine onto his hand again. He scrubbed vigorously as a brown dye floated off Brom's palm, then stopped, his mouth agape with amazement. There on Brom's palm was the Gedwai Ignazia.
"You're a rider?"
he asked incredulously. A painful smile flickered on Brom's face.
"Once upon a time that was true, but no more. When I was young, younger than you are now, I was chosen by the riders to join their ranks. While they trained me, I became friends with another apprentice, Morzan, before he was a Forsworn."
Aragorn gasped. That had been over 100 years ago.
"But then he betrayed us to Galbatorix, and in the fighting at Doru Ariba, Vroengard's city, my young dragon was killed. Her name was Sephira."
"Why didn't you tell me this before?" asked Aragorn softly. Brom laughed.
"Because there was no need to."
He stopped. His breathing was labored. His hands were clenched.
"I am old, Aragorn. So old. Though my dragon was killed, my life has been longer than most. You don't know what it is to reach my age. Look back and realize that you don't remember much of it. Then to look forward and know that many years still lie ahead of you. After all this time, I still grieve for my Sephira, and hate Galbatorix for what he tore from me."
His feverish eyes drilled into Aragorn as he said fiercely,
"Don't let that happen to you. Don't. Guard Sephira with your life, for without her, it's hardly worth living."
"You shouldn't talk like this. Nothing's going to happen to her," said Aragorn, worried. Brom turned his head to the side.
"Perhaps I'm rambling."
His gaze passed blindly over Murtagh. Then he focused on Aragorn. Brom's voice grew stronger.
"Aragorn, I cannot last much longer. This is a grievous wound. It saps my strength. I have not the energy to fight it. Before I go, will you take my blessing?"
Everything will be all right, said Aragorn, tears in his eyes. You don't have to do this.
It is the way of things. I must. Will you take my blessing?
Aragorn bowed his head and nodded, overcome. Brom placed a trembling hand on his brow.
Then I give it to you. May the coming years bring you great happiness.
He motioned for Aragorn to bend closer. Very quietly he whispered 7 words from the ancient language, and then even more softly told him what they meant.
That is all I can give you. Use them only in great need.
Brom blindly turned his eyes to the ceiling.
And now, he murmured, for the greatest adventure of all.
Weeping, Aragorn held his hand, comforting him as best he could. His vigil was unwavering and steadfast, unbroken by food or drink. As the long hours passed, a grey pallor crept over Brom, and his eyes slowly dimmed. His hands grew icy, the air around him took on an evil humour. Powerless to help, Aragorn could only watch as the Razak's wound took its toll. The evening hours were young and the shadows long, when Brom suddenly stiffened. Aragorn called his name and cried for Murtagh's help, but they could do nothing. As a barren silence dampened the air, Brom locked his eyes with Aragorn's. Then contentment spread across the old man's face, and a whisper of breath escaped his lips. And so it was that Brom, the storyteller, died. With shaking fingers, Aragorn closed Brom's eyes and stood. Saphira raised her head behind him and roared mournfully at the sky, keening her lamentation. Tears rolled down Aragorn's cheeks as a sense of horrible loss bled through him. Haltingly, he said, "We have to bury him."
"We might be seen," warned Murtagh.
"I don't care."
Murtagh hesitated, then bore Brom's body out of the cave along with his sword and staff. Saphira followed them.
"To the top," Aragorn said thickly, indicating the crown of the sandstone hill.
"We can't dig a grave out of stone," objected Murtagh.
"I can do it."
Aragorn climbed onto the smooth hilltop, struggling because of his ribs. There Murtagh lay Brom on the stone. Aragorn wiped his eyes and fixed his gaze on the sandstone. Gesturing with his hand, he said,
"Mawai Stenar."
The stone rippled. It flowed like water, forming a body-length depression in the hilltop. Molding the sandstone like wet clay, he raised waist-high walls around it. They laid Brom inside the unfinished sandstone vault with his staff and sword. Stepping back, Aragorn again shaped the stone with magic. It joined over Brom's motionless face and flowed upward into a tall, faceted spire. As a final tribute, Aragorn set runes into the stone. "Here lies Brom, who was a dragon rider, and like a father to me. May his name live on in glory." Then he bowed his head and mourned freely. He stood like a living statue until evening, when light faded from the land. That night he dreamed of the imprisoned woman again. He could tell that something was wrong with her. Her breathing was irregular, and she shook, whether from cold or pain he did not know. In the semi-darkness of the cell, the only thing clearly illuminated was her hand, which hung over the edge of the cot. A dark liquid dripped from the tips of her fingers. Aragorn knew it was blood.
Diamond Tomb. When Aragorn woke, his eyes were gritty, his body stiff. The cave was empty except for the horses. The litter was gone. No sign of Brom remained. He walked to the entrance and sat on the pitted sandstone.
So the witch Angela was correct. There was a death in my future, he thought, staring bleakly at the land.
The topaz sun brought a desert heat to the early morning.
A tear slid down his listless face and evaporated in the sunlight, leaving a salty crust on his skin. He closed his eyes and absorbed the warmth, emptying his mind. With a fingernail, he aimlessly scratched the sandstone. When he looked, he saw that he had written, "Why me?" He was still there when Murtagh climbed up to the